Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I hope everybody's having a really nice day. It was beautiful outside. It's cloudy. It's going to rain, but who cares? It's going to be really sunny in here, and we're going to have some really good fun. This is Book Discussion, the show that caters to people that like to read books, because books are your best escape when you're feeling blue, when you're feeling sad, and you want to get into another world. How's that for starting a show really different? And today's book is going to take you to Ireland, Boston Harbor, Harbor Island, and the author of this outstanding five-star novel, I should know because I gave it five stars, ha-ha, is Carla Negres. Hi, Carla.
Hi, Fran. How are you?
Oh, just peachy. I really wish the sun would come out. I get a feeling it's going to rain later, and that's no fun. But before I forget, because, you know, sometimes you got so much on your mind, for those people that are listening, and I hope you're listening and going to learn something today, next Wednesday on Chat Time, we've got John Land. And on Thursday at 4 on Book Discussion, we've got Dennis Palumbo, Phantom Limb. The week after, we have Dr. Kenneth Wien, one of the top mental health specialists in the world, and his short stories, Broody New Englander. And on 10:30, a surprise interview that I was asked to do with Kira, to pronounce her name, Piekwoff, No Time to Die. Really great stuff coming up. And my new show starts on October 28th. It's called Let's Write, and it's for all people that want to learn the art of writing a novel the right way from the people that know how to write it. And the authors will be John Lesquois, Mark Rubenstein, and Mary Martin. And now we're going to talk to Carla about Harbor Island. What made you decide to write about Harbor Island, that particular place?
Oh, it just absolutely fit the story for Harbor Island. For anybody who knows Boston, they have there's a inner and outer harbor, and there's islands, and they've been formed into a national kind of a national park, and I create a fictional one, a little private one that's not part of the, you know, the ones you can get on the shuttle and go off, and that's where our FBI agent Emma Sharp finds a woman who's died and has a symbol of an art thief in her hand. That's sort of the short version. but yeah, it fit the story. Emma and Colin, her teammate, as well as her now fiance, have just got back from Ireland when the story starts. So they're not even over jet lag. And this is after right at the end of Declan's Cross, the previous book. Now, technically, you don't have to read Declan's Cross. This is the fourth book in the Sharp and Donovan series, and you can read it to stand alone. But a lot of people do like to read books in order. So the one before it would be Declan's Cross, and in that story, they is an art thief who may or may not have resurfaced, and a thief that Emma and her family of art detectives, her grandfather's this world-renowned art detective, Wendell Sharp, and he's based in Ireland. And they've been chasing this thief for the past 10 years. The thief has hit around the world, but started in Ireland. And so that the thief, you know, little spoiler from Declan's Cross, is the thief is still on the loose. They don't know who the thief is. And now, for some reason that they haven't quite figured out, the thief, who is after every theft, has sent the old art detective, Emma's grandfather, a Celtic cross, a round stone, and on the stone is this inscribed cross. So it's like about the size of a palm. And so for the past 10 years, well, now Emma has gotten one, and so has her boss at this elite FBI unit, where she and Colin are based. Colin a little more loosely because he's an undercover agent and he's kind of shoehorned into the unit right now. But so her boss, Matt Yankowski, has also received a cross. And they're trying to figure out, when the story starts, what's going on with the thief. Is there some message? Is there something, is the thief escalating in some way, about to hit something else, breaking pattern? What's going on? And then this woman dies and has been shot. It's like, well, is this a murder or what? So that's how it all starts. And it does start in a whoosh. I mean, there's a lot going on right from the minute the Harbor Island starts.
That's so true, because that's one of those reasons why I get ice cream, because when I get one of your books, I read it in zap time, and I can't put it down, which is not good, which is good for you, but not good for me. And I have to tell you that my brother-in-law called me, and he said, when are you giving me the book? And they actually called us and invited us to brunch on Saturday, only if I bring him the book. I'm serious.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, I know.
I
and I
that,
said,
yeah.
And I don't want to give up my book. And I said to him, you're going to have to give it back. The problem is that the only way I'll get it back is if I Xerox it first. Because he never returns anything. He wants this one, and he wants The Lost Island by Preston and Child, Lincoln Preston.
Oh, I love
that. Lincoln
and
Child.
That book.
That book was scary. The ending was like, okay, you got to be kidding. Yeah, it was good. It was good.
Oh, it's on my to be read pile because I love their books, and I know Doug Preston, great guy.
It's different. It's not a Pendergrass novel. It's Gideon, and from the moment
The other one, Gideon. I can't think of his last. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
It's him. Gideon Crew novel. Yeah, and he brings in a new character in the book, and the ending is like, you gotta be kidding. So I'm hoping that in the next one, that he brings back this other character. In a better. It's good. It's excellent, but.
All right. Well, it's exciting. We have another Prendergast coming out, too, I think. So isn't it fun? It's just fun to talk books and share books. I do that with my mother. We share books. And it's good.
Well, I used to be able to do it with my sister when she was alive. And now I have an uncle in California who's 93, who just walked for Alzheimer's. And Uncle Leonard is friends with Alan Topol, believe it or not. And I have to send him a few books, too, because he's my book partner. He and my six-year-old niece that loves to read. So any children's books that come my way, I give to Penelope. And she reads them, and then she calls me up and tells me what she thinks. So at least I have somebody.
Oh, isn't that? Oh, she's starting young. That's good. To be able to read a book and enjoy it, and then to say what you think about it. Because sometimes, you put down a book and just go, okay, that was good. And then you're not, I don't know, sometimes I even find it hard to even articulate what a book was. Why did I like it? And to start that at 6 years old, I think is wonderful.
That's why I do book reviews. But my mom used to make me take notes on every book I read when I was younger. I had to go to the library, take out six, and had to have note cards or a notepad. And every time I read, I had to have a summary of why I liked the book. And not just why I liked it, but almost like a book review. I think that's what got me into doing this. I have no clue why, but yeah, I've been doing this since I'm six.
Yeah,
my mother literally made me take notes on books. So that when the teacher said you have to do a book report on whatever, snap, no problem, had it already done, didn't have to worry about it. That and 75 hours of homework. But while this is going on, the other Matt was working with Colin, and his wife goes missing. How come?
Oh, yes. So Matt Yankowski, the boss of this elite FBI unit in Boston, is still in Ireland and wants to talk to Emma's grandfather and to find out more about this thief and whether they can find out who it is and why he got one of these little crosses and how the thief knows who he is and where he is. And so Matt has stayed there. Well, meanwhile, his wife, now he started this unit in Boston, about a year ago, and he did one of those things that sometimes people do, and he kind of assumed his wife, who's a psychologist, would just want to move with him, and he didn't take due diligence in discussing everything with her. And she's stayed in Northern Virginia. So they've been kind of on the outs here for months. And so he's in Ireland, and he don't know where she is. He can't find her. And at first he's not worried. He just figures she's gone to Paris with her sister again or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes increasingly worrisome as to where she is. And does her situation have anything to do with this art thief and with this death in Boston? So you have this kind of spider web of connections going on, and wondering if things are connected, and if so, how, and where is she, and is she going to be all right? And then their relationship, which is, you know, it's been going on through, this is now the fourth book, so we've been seeing little bits of their relationship. But as I said, you don't have to read the previous books to dive into Harbor Island. Believe me, you figure it out pretty good that they're on the outskirts. So Yankowski, Yank as we call him, has Colin gotten back to Boston with Emma, check the apartment, this little rat hole apartment mm-hmm. that he's been living in, because he thinks, well, you know, his wife Lucy is going to come back and they'll get a place together. But in the meantime, he's sort of just close to the office. It's, you know, it's got a bed, it's got a shower, it's fine. And Colin, you know, he's trying to find her too. So you have all that stuff coming together with now the death of this woman in Boston, who turns out to be working on a documentary, kind of a
that would
a
be
film.
Maisie.
You know, well, Maisie and Rachel, who
right.
is the woman. Rachel is and they're Maisie's working on the film, and then Rachel's involvement with the film and what she wants to do. But it's a documentary, and they're tying in. They've figured out that there's an art thief, and there's Irish art, and there's this Jack Yates art, and that's one of the original paintings that got stolen 10 years ago was a Jack B. Yates painting, and he's an Irish artist, and William Butler Yeats's brother. So it's a real, real guy, fictional painting, but you know, but a real painter, and that would be very, very valuable now. And so that's on that, and Emma and Colin have to figure this out, and then they're also dealing kind of in the background with the Boston police who are investigating this woman's death, and then in conjunction with the FBI. So there's all kinds of little things going on, but I love to get into the characters and the relationships and who these people are.
That's what I was just going to ask you next. That's my next question.
That's your next question.
To tell everybody. First of all, how did Colin come to work for the high impact unit?
Oh, okay. Well, Colin had been, so this is the late fall. So all the leaves are off the trees, but it hasn't snowed yet. Those of us in the Northeast know exactly when this is. And earlier, like around in the summer, he had come off of a very grueling deep cover investigation. And he had really kind of been out there alone, maybe more so than he needed to be. But in any case, he got the job done, and it was international arms traffickers. And so he was back. And then he got to know Emma through Yankowski, who had recruited her to become an FBI agent. Because Emma is a former nun. So in Saint's Gate, the first book in the Sharp and Donovan series, Emma discovers a murdered nun at her former convent. And Yank gets Colin to keep an eye on her because he's not sure what is going on here. And that's how Emma and Colin meet, and then how Colin gets back in touch with Yank, and who had been his first contact agent. And so as that story progresses, it's clear that Colin's got to do something. I mean, he's been pretending to be have a desk job in Washington, and it's been a grueling case. And then there's another one in Heron's Cove, and Yank finally says, you're a member of my team. That's the deal. And so he's, you know, that's at least nominally a member of this small team in Boston.
So wait a minute. But let's bring in some other characters. some interesting ones. First of all, tell us about Rachel. She's the person that died, that gets killed. But what was her role? Why would anybody want to kill her? She called Emma, right? And she wanted to talk to her, but she never got to talk to her.
Yeah, and she never did. And they're wondering, well, that's part of what they have to figure out is what was the urgency and how did she? And they find that, well, she was the last person she saw. It turns out is Aoife O'Byrne, who is an Irish artist, a very well-known Irish artist who's come to Boston, and Emma and Colin have no idea, but they do know who she is. They have no idea she's in Boston until after they find Rachel, after Emma finds Rachel. And Aoife hasn't told them, but now Aoife's in touch with Emma, too. And so there's this little complicated stuff because Aoife and her sister Kitty are the nieces of the man who owned the art that the art thief stole 10 years ago. Mm. So the Jack B. Yeats paintings and this 15th century silver wall cross, this Celtic cross that the thief then copies onto this little stone in Rachel's hand. So there's a connection to the stolen art, which has never been recovered. And so we just like, okay, so why was Rachel in touch with Aoife? Rachel had been talking to her about background for the film, and did Rachel actually figure out who the art thief is? And who might it be among this, these various people, or is it somebody completely different? So we have all those questions rolling around, and Rachel's one of those hard-driving people, and she's had her missteps, and this is a great opportunity for her, and Maisie is Maisie Bristol, and her father, who is Rachel's ex-husband. Yeah, Travis, and they've had they have this Boston base, but they're also in California and doing Hollywood. And Maisie has just become extremely successful, and Travis, her father, and Rachel have had bumps along the way, and so that's part of what goes on with their character and their relationships, and Emma and Colin tangle all of this stuff to try to figure out what is going on, who killed Rachel, who is the art thief? Is the art thief back, or is this all about something else that's in the relationships among all these, Rachel and her ex-husband and her and Maisie and that whole world, and then we have Oliver Fairbairn in there, and he's this guy, this mythologist who helps with research into the movie they're doing, and so there's just all kinds of good stuff going on in Harbor Island. You can probably tell I had a great, great time writing it.
Yeah, I know. He's interesting, Oliver Fairbairn. He is very interesting.
Oh, yes.
Well, that's all we'll say about him.
He's an English guy, and so he's been a consultant on various movies out in Hollywood, and then now he's doing some research in Boston, and he has goes back to England and stuff. So they're trying to figure out, all right, well, who is he, and what's his connection to all of this stuff. And what, does he have a connection to Aoife? Does he have a connection to, and really they're looking around and trying to figure out, okay, what are the connections to Emma and Colin and to Matt Yankowski and to his missing wife? And how do all these different pieces fit together? And then the Sharps themselves. So we have Wendell Sharp, our octogenarian art detective in Dublin, and then Emma's brother, Lucas, in Heron's Cove, Maine, which is where Sharp Fine Art Recovery is actually based. That's their main headquarters, and that's and Emma's brother runs it now. He always thought he would run it with Emma, but she's chosen a different path with the FBI now. And so all of those pieces, and then we have the the convent there and her relationship and people, like all these little questions going on among all these characters as the story moves forward. So I mean, they're fascinating characters to write about, to get to know on the page, and what all this does to Emma and Colin's relationship. Because
that was what I was just writing, because it does put a strain on it, doesn't it?
It really does, because now they've just gotten engaged. So Declan's at the end of Declan's Cross, Colin proposes to Emma in a Dublin bar. Now that's on a rainy night. I think that sounds really romantic. But it seems, you know, they haven't known each other that long, and there's been a lot of intense stuff going on around them while they've been falling for each other. So, and they haven't told anybody yet that they're engaged, because it's just totally brand new. And here now they've got a dead body and all this stuff going on. And Emma being a sharp, it just brings on scrutiny from all kinds of people, especially when you have an art thief thrown in there who's been, you know, for the last 10 years. And so it does complicate not only her relationship with Colin, because he's an undercover agent, and, well, what does that mean to his career? And he's had his own career crisis, and he's just going to quit. And he's from Maine, a fishing village, Rock Point, and he's thinks about quitting. That's it. I'm going to go do puffin tours, you know, go back to lobstering, because that's how he started out. And so he comes, so having a sharp and her differences and her, they're very different people. They both grew up in Southern Maine, but from really different worlds. Mm. And yet they're totally committed to each other, but it is complicated. And then we have her complicating also Yank's life. He's the one, he wanted her on this elite team. He knows how good she is at what she does, but she doesn't come from a simple background, but that's part of what he wanted, was her expertise in art history and in art theft, art crimes, and her background as a sharp. Her grandfather has 60 years of experience as an art detective and in art recovery art. I mean, this whole background of hers, and that's important to the work that they're doing, because it brings in this perspective, because art theft is a huge international thing, and this unit that he does is really focused on criminal enterprises and criminals who have huge, nearly virtually unlimited resources, and art theft plays a role in that, and she's also very, very analytical, so she can look at all kinds of things and is a very valued agent, but complicated.
Well, I'll tell you, I was very proud of myself. It is complicated. But I was very proud that I didn't need to take out my graphic organizer for characters and figure out who everybody was, which is what happened. Yeah, it's the truth. As an educator, I always did, you know, with kids, teaching them how to write character studies. So I would say, okay, we're going to create a character, and I'm going to explain to you how to do the different details and appearance, whatever. And if a book gets too complicated and I have to pull out my character chart or my settings chart, we're in big trouble because it means that there are too many characters. Yeah, I've done that. I've done that with books recently, and I'm saying, like, okay, there's like 42 characters in the book, 97 settings, and I'm supposed to review this book in how many words?
And sometimes you think of Harry Potter certainly has a lot of characters, but somehow or another, you keep them straight. I think it's just the names. They sound like who they are. You know, Hermione Granger couldn't be anybody but Hermione Granger. It's just so amazing how she does. Yeah, in the Sharp and Donovan series, I think I've created a world populated with, it's like, it's Emma and Colin are at the center of it, but they both have interesting and strong families, and then they have friends. We have our Finian Bracken, our Irish priest, who has a very complex background himself. He and his twin brother started an Irish distillery, and just at age 22, I mean, it was such a dream. And then Finian got married and had a couple of little girls, and they were taken from him. in a sailing accident, and he now has become a priest and left Ireland for a year at least to be a priest in Little Rock Point, Maine, where that's the Starling fishing village where Colin is from. And, oh, my goodness, remember Aoife O'Byrne, our Irish
artist?
That was
cool.
Yeah.
That was really cool. I go, and the way you did that, and each time they get together in this book, I go, like, are they just going to give it a rest and get it together again? Or is he actually going to go and behave himself? I said, oh, that's no fun.
Before he became a priest, they
had
something of a
play. And you played that scene very well.
So all of that, and then of course Emma and Colin have no idea about this connection, and it all just kind of, again, think of this as a web of things going on rather than this straight line. It's really Harbor Island, I think of, as just so much going on. I sometimes when I do a plot, I always think, I think it's like a Sudoku puzzle. You know, I paint everybody into, it's like you get, you know, when you get to eight, you, all of a sudden you have this little square and you got two eights in the square and you got to erase stuff and it's just take it all down. But once you got it, everything fits. It's perfect. And you don't know how you messed up in the first place because it seems so easy now that it's all done. And that to me is when a plot is working. It feels like a Sudoku puzzle that's working. I don't know. It just, for some reason, that just resonates with me.
You see, you sound like you're using my character charts. You see what I mean? The graphic organizers to help you write. Exactly. So my question's a little different, but we're going to get back into the plot. When you have reoccurring characters, this is going to be one of the topics we're going to talk about on my new show at the end of the month. Well, how do you decide which characters to spotlight? Because you have a lot of reoccurring characters. You have Emma and Colin, and you have Kitty, and you have Finny, and you have all of them. So how do you decide which one is going to be the main character in the next book, or in whichever book that you're going to do?
Yeah. Well, right now, Sharp and Donovan, we have Emma and Colin have been the focus of the books. But in Harbor Island, the Finian story, he is, you know, that's a story that's very strong through Harbor Island. And then Yank's story with his wife is very strong through there. But Emma and Colin's relationship and what all this means is still really at the heart of it. So now I'm actually writing Keeper's Reach, the next book in the series. Mm-hmm. And we really get into Colin's brother, Mike Donovan, who plays a very minor role. Well, you know, in Harbor Island, I'm trying to think if he's even in Harbor Island. I think he is. No, you're
a
not in
bit.
There. You would know. See, you probably got your chart there, but we'll have to find out. But I think they mentioned him, but not really.
He's like an imp. He's like the imp of the family. He's funny.
Yeah, well, he's funny, but he's also this hard-edged guy who's up in the Gold Coast area of Maine, and he lives alone, and he's a wilderness guide. And I've had so many readers say they want more of Mike, too.
Yeah,
and
I like
him. And I've been planning Keeper's Reach. Keeper's Reach is the name of the next book. And I just knew that Mike would come more to the fore. But we still have Emma and Colin in there. And it is, you do have to be careful about getting the cast of thousands. Now, I like and have no trouble with books with more than four characters, you know, just a lot of people going around. A lot of the writers I write have a rich cast, but you do have to be careful about not having so many that it feels like, oh, well, we've got to have a cameo from this one. You don't really need it. Sometimes they're just like, send them on vacation. They're not in this book. Whatever the case may be. Like this one in Harbor Island, we don't have quite as much with Lucas Sharp, Emma's brother, as we did, say, in Heron's Cove. He played a bigger role in that book. So I just think of it as a world, and who is in this world, and who are the central characters of this particular story. And then I don't worry about it beyond that.
I want to see Emma and Colin get married because I want to be the flower girl.
Where do you think they should get married? I
you haven't decided yet.
Maine. Well, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Maine. Yeah, in the spring rather than see now with the end of Harbor Island.
Yeah, I know.
It's still fall. So we're, and Finney and Bracken has never experienced a New England winter. But Emma and Colin, of course, have, and they kind of like it. And then Matt Yankowski, now his wife's coming up from Virginia, and or not, you see. And is she going to get what's going to happen?
I think everybody's waiting for them. Everybody's waiting for them to get married.
Yeah, and you just think about the setting of Harbor Island and of the Sharp and Denovan series in general, integral to the characters, to the stories, the idea of these harbor islands and what they mean and how you can have someplace in the city that is both feels remote and yet the city is right there. If you look at the cover of Harbor Island, you get
a feel
for that.
Yeah, it's right in front of me. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's amazing. And anybody who's flown into Boston has seen it, or if you stayed out at Logan Airport, there's a great hotel there, and you just look across the city and you see that view. It's an amazing view, and yet you feel isolated. But they have Boston, and then we have Heron's Cove, which is kind of an upscale touristy town where the Sharps are from, and Rock Point, the fishing village where the Donovans are from, and then Ireland and all that comes in.
I think they
and
need to let you put pictures in this. In the next book, I think they should let you put pictures of the places.
Oh, I love to do pictures. In fact, I do a lot on Facebook, but I also do some on my blog and at carlaneggers.com. You can go see pictures. But I'm going to be adding all kinds of stuff about the settings because I think it's just so like in Declan's Cross and in Harbor Island we have this little village of Declan's Cross on the South Irish coast, and it's in the same area as Ardmore, Ireland, which is just incredibly beautiful and has these ruins related to St. Declan, who is pretty much a contemporary of St. Patrick.
I really think there should be pictures. The cover is gorgeous. It really is.
Isn't that a beautiful cover? Oh,
it's
man,
gorgeous.
I wish I could take credit for it.
Who picked the cover? Did the publisher or they let you actually pick your own cover?
Well, it's a consultative process. So at first, they came up with some ideas, and I said, you know, they were beautiful covers. I said, but I really see the Bach guideline on this.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And then they put it together. They found the colors, the way the woman's looking across and kind of crouched down, that creates such atmosphere. They did an amazing job. I really love that cover.
It is. It's really gorgeous because, you know, for those of you that have never been to Boston, somebody's going to think it's New York Harbor. Seriously. They're not going to know.
Oh, yeah. New York Harbor is a beautiful place, too.
Yeah, but this is gorgeous and there's no pollution out there, which is really nice. I'm telling you, I've been getting like this weird sense of, I have a weird sense of humor anyway. So in this particular book that I couldn't put down that seriously gave me eye strain, people. Now, I know Mike Donovan. I know he likes to just go in and do things and he'll take chances and just doesn't care. He's my kind of person because I'll do the same thing. Sometimes you just have to go in and not care about the consequences. He gets in trouble a lot, so I can't wait to see what you're going to do with him in the next book.
I'm having fun with it so far.
Oh, that's good. When is this next one coming out, by the way? So just so that I'm ready.
I think if I pull it off, it'll be about the same time next year. Yep.
Oh, good for my next birthday when I turn 107. I have no.
A
you
slight
know,
exaggeration.
Close to it the way I feel sometimes. No, it's funny because I went for a medical appointment the other day and somebody asked my insurance card. I go, it's a funny thing. I didn't bring it because I don't want you to see it. And then she looked at whatever and she said, are you serious? I go, I'm never serious about anything as far as my date of birth. It's a misprint. Don't worry about it. And it's a truth. And they actually called GHI to see if I was telling the truth. I said, I never tell the truth. And my mother had Alzheimer's, and she could swear I'm 10 years younger, so just take it at that. What can I say? So, I'm serious. I mean, I get you know, at times, so you sit there and I'm reading and I'm saying, I'm very sharp and I you know, remember everything that I read pretty much, and things that happen that no one wants you to remember. And then some person asks you this dumb question, like, what's your date of birth? And then you tell them and they look at you, can you hear me? Do you understand? No, definitely not. I just review books and do 3 radio shows, but I couldn't even tell you what my name is. It's whatever. He's like, oh, my God. So this movie, the relationship between Maisie and her father, are they very close?
Well, I, you know, in an
she's
in
got
an odd way,
this one.
Yeah, Maisie is, I mean, she has gotten this just sudden mega success.
Mm.
And yet wants to just do what she wants to do and
yeah.
is very unassuming about it and is more into the work than into all the external stuff. So she doesn't do any of the stuff that you might expect of somebody who
mm.
has such and is so young and so successful, because she likes the work.
Mm.
But it does change her relationship with her father, who is struggling. And here, you know, it's like, well, and it raises a question. If you're a parent, you like to think of the idea that if you do well, and
mm.
you want your children to do well and go beyond you. And is he? How happy is he that she has gone way beyond anything that he ever could manage? And then is he happy in his own work? And so all of those questions come into their relationship. And yet. They do seem, they're very tight. This island, this little Bristol island, where Rachel is found dead, the family actually owns, and they're looking at what to do with this island now. Can they develop it? Should they turn it over to the park system? What should they do? And Maisie is the one who's been able to save it and keep it in the family and to do something with it, and has all these big ideas. And then what's the father's role? And so, you know, on the one hand, maybe, you know, very, very excited for the daughter and all she's accomplished
mm.
and done, but isn't finished himself, doesn't feel like he has completely, he wants his own success too. So that all plays into the story.
Well, what would you do if DeClan's Cross was a real place? Would you go visit? And how would you picture it? If you could, I know some of the places are fictional
mm.
and some of them are real. And one of the questions that I'm going to start focusing on in some of my shows is setting. Because in this particular book, setting plays a very important part in the book and where it is.
Yes.
And every time you describe DeClan's Cross, I don't like flying, but I'm going to go to Florida because my 13-year-old niece demands my presence at her party. And since I wrote the poem and since I wrote the candle lighting ceremony, and it's in March, and my niece had me write it last week, and I did write it. It's done, people. And I'm going to light candle number 6 because I said wonderful things about myself. I really should since I wrote the poem. I probably will never get to Ireland because it's too far, too many whatevers. But if you could picture this place, what would it look like? And if it was real, would you go there?
Oh, absolutely. And
yeah.
I do think of it as sort of real because
yeah.
it is so close to this Ardmore area. And I sort of pretend it's not Ardmore, but it looks like Ardmore. And Ardmore
mm.
is bigger, but it's still a tiny place. And if you go to Ardmore, it's on the south coast. So there's the Celtic Sea is right there. And there's a headland, and you can walk out. They call it the Cliff Walk, and you go past a St. Declan's ruin, like an old church and a holy well, and you keep walking out along the cliffs with the water straight down onto your left and up. And then there's these grass, you know, fields, and you come around, and then it comes around the headland and down to a round tower, this
mm.
tall tower that comes out, and that was it's a 12th century tower, and a old cemetery with all these Celtic crosses in it, and a ruin of an old cathedral. So you can see it and feel it. And then you come into the village, and it's very contemporary. There's a wonderful restaurant there with the most amazing roulade. Oh, gosh, with fresh fruit on it. It's just, I'm there right now. Mentally, it's just wonderful, and there's a beach there. And in fact, this summer, I had the great good fortune of going there with our daughter and our son-in-law, who's of Irish descent, and our two little ones, 5-year-old Leo and 2-year-old Una, and we had ice cream cones and walked on the beach and looked at the birds, and it's just so beautiful and so, it's historic and peaceful and contemporary all at the same time. That's why I think it's something that I just love about Ireland is just how seamless all of the history and the contemporary stuff all mixes together. So I really love it.
That's why you have to put pictures in the next book for people like myself that'll never get there.
They have to
create pictures for the Clans Cross so that if you use it in another book, people could actually see in the center of the book the picture where it is. Because it just has to come alive. It's just my thought.
It would be a fun
today.
Thing to do with a novel when it, especially when the setting is so critical to it. And I will get up my Ireland page and on my main page in Boston onto my website. You can find pictures. If you follow me on Facebook, I'm always putting up pictures of Ireland, and you can go and find them on there. I just got to get them on my website. But I get so caught up in my writing, then I say, I should do this, I should do that, and then I keep writing.
That's what makes it so unique, because it's just so different. And it's great, which means that you would be great if you have the time. November 25th, everybody, I am going to have the second Let's Write show. November 25th is a Tuesday at 4. And we're going to be talking about setting, and it's going to be more like historical fiction with a touch of murder. And we're going to talk about, Alan Topol, Tom Sawyer, and an author that's phenomenal from Spain, Stuart Yates, who writes historical fiction that scares the daylights out of me, and his characters are totally frightening, but his settings are in the past, like in the BC. I would love you to come on that, because we're talking about how you choose a setting for a novel and how you choose different settings for reoccurring characters, because Alan Topol's Argentine Triangle was great. And sometimes authors switch from the past to the present and back again. So he's going to come on, and Tom Sawyer is going to talk about setting and what happens when his character, Barney Moon, gets sent to a place that he doesn't want to be and how he gets stuck there and never gets out, and when they're out of their comfort zone. So that would be interesting. And Stuart Yates writes about Harry Haranadin in the past, and he scares the daylights out of me every time he writes something. And Tom, so I would love you to join that show, because we're going to focus on setting. And what
that
happens?
Sounds great. When is it? November
25th at 4.
25th.
I will remind you. I'm going to come up with questions.
All right, That could be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Tom Sawyer is great. Well, you know him. He's great. Alan is fantastic. And Stuart is, if he can get the connection from Spain, he's very, very interesting. And he's really good. Ooh. And it would be great, because this way we could talk about, maybe people actually learn something, how you create a setting for a character. And what happens if you stuck Emma and Colin in India, or you stuck them, put them in another country? Or what would happen if they had to solve a murder somewhere else besides Ireland? What would happen if a character gets out of their comfort zone? Or what would happen if the character picked their own setting? Where would they like to go to solve something?
Yeah, those are fascinating questions. We have a Texan, Sam Padgett, who's part of the hit team here in Boston, So he hasn't spent any time in Boston. He's just getting used to the lay of the land. And there's some fun exchanges, because he has a different sense of humor. So there's fun exchanges between him and Colin. So that is the fish out of water, the idea. Or like, why is this particular setting chosen? And could a book be set anywhere? And my, the idea is the setting is not just like it has to be where it is, that it, the setting does, and the time of year, they do matter to the story, as opposed to they're just window dressing.
What would happen before, one final question, this is, I just thought of it as I'm writing it down. would you ever take something that happened in De Clans Cross or even in Boston in the past, a murder in the past, and bring it to the present for Emma and Colin to solve?
That's an interesting idea, isn't it?
That's just my thought for the day. I could come up with ideas. I can't write something like that. I know I can't. I can write other stuff, but I come up with ideas that I surprise myself at times. Seriously, surprise myself at times, because these would be the things that new authors need to learn how to do. Because a lot of times an author will write a prologue in the past, and all of a sudden they come into the present, but they never get back to the past, so you don't know why they wrote it. And it gets very confusing.
Right, yeah, that's the trick of doing prologues. You know, I don't do them very often, but because they can be tricky.
And dialogue is the other thing for that month. Besides setting dialogue, how do you keep the dialogue going so that the reader doesn't fall asleep and wants to keep it moving, and yet you're able to create suspense? Now, I'm not going to tell anybody if I figured it out, but there is a really great surprise ending in this book that you won't expect, and that's all I'm going to tell them.
Okay.
I'm not going to give it away, but before I forget, for those of you that want some excellent books to read and want to know just how many books I read in the last couple of days, quite a few. Christian by Disguise by Erna Kammerman Perry talks about a Jewish woman as a child that had to pretend to be Christian. She had to get her first communion and convince everyone that she wasn't Jewish in order for her and her mother not to be killed by the Nazis. Mm. This was a book that was, what I really loved about it, of course it's a memoir, it was less than 200 pages, and it was perfect. Another book that people might be interested in, The Maybelline Prince by Danae Montague King, if you want to learn the true story about Evelyn Williams, the woman that is Maybelline, how Maybelline was invented, how the makeup, and how Danae Montague King invented DMK and his life. This is one story that was quite interesting. It took me quite a while to read it because I wanted to make sure that I got it right. No Time to Die by Kira Piekwoff is really interesting, just because I read a couple in this week. And yesterday I read To the Breaking Point, POINT, about a woman that owns a ballet company and what she did in order to keep it alive and the fact that she sold the soul and bodies of her ballerinas and what happened. Cindy McDonald, it's really quite good. And that's just some of the books I read yesterday and the day before, seriously. So that's about five or six. Yeah, that's probably why my eyes are bothering me. And Pigeon River Blues by Wayne Zirl and Real Murder by Lauren Carr. Other than that, I didn't read anything. What can I tell you? And I've got another 37 or 40 more to read because I lost count. But I have a couple more questions. A lot of people, when they create a novel, they don't know where to start. So when you create the entire plot, do you come up with the characters or do you come up with a plot outline or you just sit and write?
Yeah, sometimes it depends on the book, all of the above. It's really funny because I'll sit down and, like with Harbor Island, it started with the premise. I mean, I knew who Emma and Colin were, and I knew that they had just gotten back from Ireland and were engaged. So I had those as givens when I started, as opposed to when I started Fresh Saints Gate, I didn't have anything. And that definitely started with the character of Emma and the character of Colin. And so in Harbor Island, I knew that Emma, I could see her finding this woman with the cross in her hand and had been shot. And then I had to where, and I knew it was on the water, but I wasn't sure exactly. Mm. I knew it was in Boston, but was it on the Charles River? Was it I said, it's on one of these harbor islands. I absolutely knew that. And then it just develops from there. And one thing I know I can't do is just sit down cold and start plotting and outlining. I have to start working with the characters and let them come to life, and then I can go back after I've written 7,500 pages or something, and I can do more plotting once I have a sense of things and where things are going to just like, because I can't impose myself onto the characters all the time, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. They have to kind of, it's much more of an organic process for me. Mm-hmm. But it's not a chicken and an egg thing either, or maybe it is. You just don't know. Sometimes it just all comes together at once, or it's all of a piece, and you plot, you write, you rewrite. But I'm definitely not one of those linear writers where I start on page one and end up page 400 and don't go back and forth or rewrite or do anything. I don't know many who are like that, but there are a few.
I'm glad it's not page 500. It makes it so much simpler when it's not page 9. Oh, I just received a book that's about 800 pages.
That's an event, yes, that's good.
That's going to be difficult to read, and I would really appreciate it if it would have been in large print. That would help, too, seriously. So my final question is, if you could ask Emma and Colin, would they want to get married? What would they answer?
Oh, yes.
They would? But they don't
do
have
they
a day
want
in
to get... Yeah, I think that they're very committed to each other, yes.
Oh, that is good. Would you ever bring in, like, another male or female to sort of break them up or cause friction?
No.
No,
well,
we can't do that.
Well, cause friction maybe, but not break them up.
Cause friction maybe, but then we're going to get a whole bunch of people that are not going to be too happy with that, right? I know. But Emma and Colin are really are interesting characters, but... Kitty and Sean, I can't wait to see what you do with them because they finally got back together again, sort of. And
yes.
Would you ever kill off a character, a main character? You can't do that.
No, I think it doesn't feel like it's in me, but I never say never to anything. I know that I see that a lot in television shows, particularly British ones. You know, if you read somebody's leaving a series, you know they're going to get boiled and oiled on the episode.
Yeah, I know. If you're watching Days of Our Lives, Jay, if you're watching Days of Our Lives, EJ may hit the bucket this week, but we don't know for sure. I know John Lesquois killed off two characters, can't say who, and two of his books. So when I interviewed him and I said, you cannot kill off Miss Hardy, you can't kill off my gorgeous hunk, Wyatt Hunt. He says, no, I won't. I said, you can screw up his marriage, I don't care, but you cannot kill off you cannot kill off this gorgeous man. I mean, he killed off somebody at the end of the Ophelia cut, and I go like, you didn't really do that, did you? And I go like, how could he do that?
He's so good, isn't he? He is just so good.
He's great,
yeah,
but he was funny when he heard my voice, too. And he goes, oh, that's got to be Fran. I go, unfortunately for you, it is. And I was, like, hesitant to go because I said to my husband, nobody knows what I look like. And what if I walk in and go, oh, my God, look who that is. And no one said that, thank God. As a matter of fact, I won't tell you which author. It was so cute. One of the authors came over and asked for an interview. I won't say which one. And someone, his wife walked over with him, and she just gave me a funny look. And I go like, oh, I must look really good today. That's good. but, yeah, she was like, I'm not sure that he could do the interview, but the person did. And I'm getting the next book, too. Ha, ha, ha. But
awesome.
I get in the mail. You never know what's going to come at my door. I mean, Tess Gerrington, I knew she was sending it herself, Diane Gerrington. You'll never go on an African safari, people, if you read that. It's Jane Rizzoli and Wara Iles at their best. Because, actually, I'll give you one hint. There's a little friction between the two of them, and it's more realistic than any of the other. It's phenomenal. Absolutely great.
Oh,
it's coming out December
wait.
30th. Yeah. But Carl is going to join me with everybody else on November 25th for my new show, Let's Write. But before we go, tell everybody where they can find out more about you, because this is important.
So come to my website, Carla Neggers, CarlaNeggers.com, and you join my mailing list, and we just have a lot of fun.
Yeah, we do. And I read everything that you write on Facebook. That's why I put comments. And I very rarely put comments. But when I saw that you did an interview with somebody on Harbor Island, they said, "How dare that person beat me? That's not good." So, and I said, "She's going to definitely see it. Don't worry about it." So I really hope that we all get together at the Thriller Fest next year, because that was so much fun. And Larry Thompson is coming on my show on Let's Write in January, because we're gonna
awesome.
Talk about how to write true crime, and who better than Larry than to write
absolutely.
True crime
with his background,
yeah.
Texas lawyer, and a great guy and a great writer.
Yeah, he's going to talk about that with the author of Poisoned, the Hermann Billick story, which is a true story about a German man that was wrongly accused of killing 6 people in the Visral family. Stephen Schuch's arsenic poisoning. And I read the book, looked at the pictures, and I said to him, on page 252, that's the killer. I wouldn't say who it was. I wouldn't even talk about the character. I didn't want to give it away. And he said, I think you're right. But the killer got away with it. The person, they never found out who did it.
So, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I got this book.
I have
because
to write all these down. You know, you're my
good I review for book pleasures, and you have to be really good, they tell me, to review for Norm Goldman, who asked me to review for him. So I was totally honored. And he's really nice because he only won 750 words. So Fran goes to 900, he hasn't yelled to. He lets it go. And you have to ask. He puts the books up for review. And then I go through them and I say, okay, Norm, I want that one. Then you have to hope that he gives it to you. I usually get what I want. And I usually take all the children's books lately because it's easier. So thank you so much, and I'm going to definitely email you, and I'll email Lisa to tell her about November 25th. It's going to be a riot. It's going to be fun because Tom Sawyer.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Did you meet him? He was at the Thriller Fest. He's so funny. And I mean, just
he's the one I'm thinking of. I got to go look him up now to make sure it's the right guy.
The head writer of Murder, She Wrote, and we talked about Angela Lansbury on my show last week. Oh, it was so exciting.
Cool.
I wish Angela Lansbury would come on my show. It was amazing. Yeah, it was great. So you have to come on, and Tom Sawyer, Alan Topol, and Stuart Yates from Spain, and I will send you the questions.
Okay.
Just going to be like impromptu, whatever we talk about, whatever comes out, whatever. Thank you so much. And
This has been lots of fun.
It's fun. And make sure I get the next buck. And I want the first interview. Thanks.
It's
Thanks, Carla. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye.
You too.
You're welcome. Bye.